gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant. Or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
He was with me for a short 4 months, but the 4 months were very, very important to my development in becoming the starter for the Iowa Hawkeyes. He now plays in the NFL for the Giants. He spent time with the Broncos. He's from DeWitt, Iowa, and he has a pretty great story. We're going to nerd out over special teams. It's Casey Kreider. Let's have a day. Let's go. Welcome in, episode 181 of the Washed Up Walk-Ons, and we got another special guest today. We had James Morris on last Monday, a guy who, we're going to just go in succession, right? We just want our guys to, like, who did you host, and then we'll bring on him. So Nate Meyer should be soon, but James mentioned that the man Casey Kreider was his host. Casey was the snapper before me for 4 months. He was there his final season as we came into the program. He graduated and went on to play with the Cowboys, and then for a few seasons didn't really play with them, but they brought him in for camp. Then he stuck with the Broncos for a while, hung out with Josie in Denver, and now he's in New York with the Giants. And even though we were only with him for a short time, he was very big in my development as a young guy in the Iowa program. He has a pretty interesting story, and he's, right before we clicked record, he was telling us all about the dad life, so we're pretty excited to have him and talk about a few different things. Casey, welcome in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on.
First off, before we get into anything, I have an apology to make, not to any of you, but to the girl at the local coffee shop here in Waukee, because we went through the drive-thru this morning, and this girl who was not working the window. I'm sure you guys have had times like this because you play football, whatever, in Iowa City, or maybe, Casey, you've had it in your professional career. This girl takes the card. All of a sudden, she comes back, gives us, and opens the window. It's a different girl, and she's handing me my wife's drink, and she goes, hi, I listened to the podcast, and I'm like, I was caught off guard, and I go, oh, this is weird, and all of her friends, like, she asked to give the drink to me because she recognized me. She goes, I recognize you, I listened to the podcast. So if you're listening to this, whatever your name was, I'm so sorry I made you look like an absolute asshole in front of your coworkers, but I just thought I'd say that because I know you're going to listen to this episode. Anyway, Casey, welcome in.
Yeah, it's funny. I've only been noticed once in my entire career, and it was also at a coffee shop. Similar situation. I went to pay, and the guy looked at my card. He's like, are you the long snapper for the Broncos? And I was like, yeah, I am. He's like, cool, I'm a huge fan. I'm like, you're the only person who's ever recognized me. So it's either something to do with coffee shops and long snappers.
Yeah,
it's definitely. So it has to be something.
I don't feel – like, I'm very not empathetic. We've talked about it on the show. immediately recognized as we drove away that I made this girl feel like an absolute asshole, because she goes, she was like a little nervous, I think, to give me the coffee, and I go, wow, this is weird.
Well, it's kind of a weird situation, right? Like, hey, I know who you are, and it's like, you just have to be like, yeah, that's who I am, and then the conversation stops.
Right.
You know, like, you either, like, if you're someone, big, a bigger name, they ask you for an autograph.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're just a, you know, a long snapper or a podcast host, it's like, cool.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. As a, I think that's, this is almost relevant, because as a long snapper, and I want to talk about the dynamic within the team too, but as a long snapper, you're almost like, an elevated fan, right? Like, in a sense, like, you watch 95% of the game from the fan's view. And I, like, when people ask, I'm the, like, obviously people in your life know what you do, but, like, in college, growing up, like, how did you describe what you did when people asked, like, oh, what is that?
Yeah.
And would you get offended if your friends labeled your job as just bending over and looking at your nuts all day? Because Cleaver used to get all bent out of shape that I was like, oh, look, another picture of you looking at your nuts.
So, like, it's kind of, you almost have to, like, I was fortunate. When I got to Iowa, I played linebacker and D-line for, you know, a year at both positions. So, like, I kind of had some credibility.
Yeah,
I had some clout on the team, right? Like, I ran position drills. I played scout team for 2 years. Like, I had some clout in the locker room where I didn't have to, like, you know, press people. And it's simple in the NFL. Like, people start making fun of me. And it's always young guys. Like, they'll try to give you a little, oh, you're just a long snapper. And you kind of look at them and you're like, yeah, but I'm fucking rich. Like, I'm making $1 million a year to do what I do for 12 plays a game. And you're doing what you do for 40 plays a game, and your body's going to feel a lot worse. So, you have that. And then the veterans in the locker room are usually like, yeah, that's, like, one of the worst people to go after, because we're all going to wish we were him
for
3 years in the NFL. But, like, when people ask what I do and they're like, I'm so sorry, I don't even know who you are, you just kind of hit them with that's at my position, that's a compliment.
Right.
Like, you don't want to hear my name. And I've always said this, as a long snapper, we're not going to win in many football games, like, individually, but we can lose a football game pretty easily.
Really quickly, yeah.
Yeah, very easily.
Funny that you say that the other guys are going to be wishing that they were the specialist, because Drake, he showed up an hour ago for this meeting because his brain forgets time and other things already.
Well, it's about that time where there'll be a couple, like, seniors graduating at Iowa or moving on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they start talking to the coaches about, hey, I think I want to go to the next level. And then, you know, inherently someone says, you should pick up long snapping. We know a couple guys that can help you out. And then you get a couple messages. Hey, are you going to be around? Love to learn how to long snap. You know, and then you have to judge, like, okay, is this guy someone who might take my job in a couple years? Do I teach him a little bit? Or do I really help this guy out and, like, go all in on him? Because I know, like, and it's funny because Henry Krieger-Koval was one of those guys.
Yep.
Like, I taught him a little bit when I was training in Iowa City, and next thing you know, he's on our roster, and he's the emergency guy. And then I think, like, a year later or 2 years later, he was snapping in games, I think, for the Rams or the Colts. It was crazy.
Yep. That's funny. There's almost that dynamic in college, too, and I want to go back to how you came into college. But the dynamic in college is, like, I remember you told me early on, I don't know what kind of – it was one of the conversations we had. We had a lot of – for those that don't know, those listening, Casey is – you were a like a secondary education major, right? Or your education major?
Yes, I did.
Yes. So Casey was going to be like a science teacher, or you were a science teacher, like when and we'll get to that too, like once you got out of college. You're a really smart guy, and you were really respected in the locker room. Even though you were a specialist, which is tough to do, as I found out as I grew up through the program. And when I came in, Coach Ferentz, Coach Doyle, even Coach White, who didn't always really know what he was talking about, and I'd love to get your thoughts on Coach White, too, because we've shit on him on this podcast before. Drake hates him. Everybody was like, you've got the best senior – you know, leader to look at on the team. Like, people kind of knew that it was like my time very quickly and that I needed to figure shit out and that it was a good thing we had you as the senior starter to kind of lead the way. And I remember you saying, like, you know, they're always going to bring – there's always going to be a new guy. They're always looking to bring in the next long snapper because they don't care if it's you or them. They just want to get the job done. And when they bring in those other guys, I had a couple of them. They brought back Kolka for a spring after you were gone, which was weird. Then they brought in some other kid, Zach Johnson, who was just the softest piece of baby shit there ever was.
Not the golfer,
but some kid from Minnesota that I got called out for bullying, which later turned out to be, he's just soft as shit. And then Subert, who ended up playing for 2 years, those guys behind you, you're trying to, when you're younger, you're mostly focused on yourself. But then you also have this, like, responsibility as an older guy of, like, I'm kind of supposed to lead this group. And especially the guys at my position, I'm supposed to teach them what I know, teach them how to be the guy next. And it's this weird, like, I'm teaching you how to take my job, but I don't want you to quite be there yet. So it's a really weird – and you never – I don't think you ever had that in college because there was nobody else. Like, Kolka was there. Like, you had a – so let's go back to how did you even get into long snapping? Was it in high school? Because you mentioned you came in as a D lineman linebacker and then switched over. Talk about how you kind of, like, found yourself in the position of the Iowa long snapper.
Yeah, I mean, that – everything you just said is spot on. And, like, there's little nuances that – you know, I'll touch on if I can remember everything I just thought of there. But, you know, my dad taught me how to snap in high school. You know, okay. In today's day and age of long snapping, everybody goes to a camp. Everyone's got a camp guy. And I've really prided myself on not being a camp guy.
You always called yourself the last of the OGs.
That's right. And yeah. To a point where it was almost a detriment. Like, I almost was so stuck on not going to a camp that I didn't get into the league. Like, but yeah, my dad taught me, and Iowa was recruiting me as a linebacker. And I remember Lester was the coordinator when I first got there, and I went to a senior day or a junior day camp in the summer, and you know, did the drills as a linebacker. And I'm talking to Coach Herb, hey, can I snap some? And he just kind of gave me the like, all right, yeah, go ahead, snap a few footballs. And he was talking to like Brandon Weger or someone because he was the running backs coach.
Yep.
And he kind of was just like had his head to the side, had his hand out, like hit me in the hands right here. I remember I snapped the first ball, like it just hit him in the hands and he wasn't even ready. He kind of like stopped talking and looked at me and he's like, do that again. And I did it like, you know, 10 times in a row. And he was like, okay, here's what I want you to do. And you need to go back, snap this many times, send us, you know, a tape of you snapping 10 consecutive footballs from the front, from the side. And it kind of took off. My recruiting picked up. But I really wanted to play linebacker. So Reese Morgan, the legend, was my recruiter.
Everybody's a recruiter.
Right. I mean, he's the best. He brought me in on my visit, and we were at Joseph's Steakhouse on the visit. I went on an official visit in the winter, and I was cutting like 25 pounds for wrestling. And I was just like – I looked like a skeleton. I couldn't eat any of the food. And I remember the coaches talking to my dad. They were kind of like, I don't know if he can play in the Big Ten. Like, look at him. And my dad's like, listen, he's cutting 20-some pounds. He'll be okay. I told him not to do it. You know, he's an idiot. He wanted to cut the weight. And, like, the backstory was we lost in the first round of the playoffs my senior year. We were ranked number 2 and undefeated. And I was, like, so depressed and angry. I was just like, screw it. I'm going to cut the 20 pounds and wrestle 189.
DeWitt, right?
At DeWitt, yeah. But they ended up offering me to walk on, and I ended up signing and played linebacker for a year. I played Leo, so behind – Jeff Tarpinian, you know, there was a bunch of guys that were just incredible at the position. AJ Eads, and you know, just watching those guys, and then we had a bunch of people leave from my recruiting class on the D line. And if you know anything about football, like I was smart enough in the defense, I knew the difference between a 5 technique and a 3 technique. And I think they were kind of like, we need bodies for spring ball, so like let's just move him to defensive line.
Yep.
So I was just like, yeah, like they could have told me to, you know, stepbrothers wise, go eat the, you know, the white dog poop, and I would have done anything for those coaches.
They saw you as like the fresh meat punching bag where right. they could get a practice body.
So I moved, right, and we're like 2 weeks into spring ball and everybody's hurt. So now I'm finding myself taking reps with the twos in spring ball at defensive line, playing it for 2 weeks. And I mean, when I was saying I was getting blown off the ball, I mean, we're going against the ones. And on that team that year, it would have been my second year in 2010. So Riley Reiff's on the team. I think Julian Vandervelde's there, James Ferentz.
You are getting absolutely mauled.
I mean, these are NFL linemen, just, and I weigh like 245 pounds. And I remember at one point, Norm Parker, he drives up on his cart. At this point, you know, he had his foot surgery, and he was on the cart. And, I mean, he ripped my ass harder than anyone's ever ripped my ass. And I'm looking at my D-line coach like, yo, you need to, like, please save me. Like, I've only been doing this for 2 weeks. And the D-line coach looks at me and just starts ripping my ass too. And I'm just, like, taking it. Yes, sir. Sorry, coach. Okay, it won't happen again. Sorry. And we get up done with practice that day, and I remember the D-line coach comes up. He's like, listen, like, you didn't deserve that, but, like, I didn't want to take it, so I kind of let you take it. Like, just so one-on-one, like, I'm really sorry. But then I found out real quick I wasn't going to play D-line in the Big Ten.
Right.
And Andy Schultz was graduating. So I said, I'd like to just snap. What do you guys think? And KF and Coach Herb were like, yeah, but you got to play scout team the rest of the year. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, scout team was so much fun because – you literally look at a card, it tells you what's going to happen and what to do, and then you just go as hard as you possibly can.
Yep.
Much to the – like, I played scout defense, so the offensive players hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Reiff and Ferentz got into a lot of fights that year. Another guy, Joe Forgy, was another guy who was on the scout team a lot. Like, Joe Forgy would get in a fight, and then I would go back him up. And I remember James came out of nowhere and just ear-holed me. And I, like, I'm on the ground, I look up at him, like, dude, what the fuck? And he was like, sorry, you were fighting him, and he was fighting him, and, like, you're on the other side, like, I had to. I was like, all right, whatever, I get it. You know, and then Andy got knocked out against Minnesota, got up and started walking to the wrong sideline, and I was like, shoot, I might go in. And I got a call.
And this was year
–
this was year
– 2010, so
this was your second year.
Yeah. So I get a call from Coach Irvin in the box, and he's like, you're up. So this is like the third quarter. I had spent the entire first half. Like, I'm pretty sure they let me travel that year because I was like going – I was working so hard on scout team. It was like your reward. Like, hey, you get to travel this year. Plus, you might play next year. And Coach Herb was like, you're up. And I had literally spent the entire first half like trying to stay warm because it was so cold in Minnesota.
This was like the last game of the season, right?
It was the last game of the year. The field was ice. They like literally chipping ice off the field. And – I had to go in and play. It was trial by fire, and I ended up playing well. I snapped fine. I almost made a tackle. Like, I blacked out, just completely overran a guy, but I felt cool. And I just remember we got our butts kicked, but I remember my dad, like, texted me comments from after the game, and Coach Ferentz was like, you know, one of the only positives today was Casey Kreider had to go in and step up, and he did a great job. And that's, like, the ultimate compliment you can get as a player, especially in the Iowa program. Like, them just saying you got your opportunity and we're proud of what he did. And that's how I got started. And then just kind of along the way, I got lucky to be around good people. You know, Andy Schultz was one of them. Danny Olsta helped me a lot. Joel Hilgenberg was in the building. But like you were talking about, like, yeah, like I got lucky because my first year, I just loved sitting in the film room with Pat Anger. Like he would be sitting there watching film. And I was like the little brother sitting in the back of the room. I didn't even say anything. He just, like, let me come in the room and sit in the back and watch.
That
and
sounds
every
like
once
Pat.
While, yeah, every once in a while, him or AJ would say, like, ask me a question. And I would just be, like, just deer in headlights. Like, yep, cool. This is awesome. But I just sit there and watch him. And that's how I learned to watch film. And then I did that with Andy Schultz. But I asked him. Like, that was kind of, like you said, like, and Andy had no threat for me to take his job, right? Because I was, like, number three or four on the depth chart and just worked my way up. But, like, Tyler and I, we played the same position, but we played a completely different position at Iowa. Like, when I was there, we ran pro punt.
Mm-hmm.
When you started, you were running more of the spread punt. But when I was a senior, like, I knew you were coming in, and I was like, okay, that was the biggest jump for me. So I try to, like, kind of get you to, hey, come watch some film. I'll show you what I see.
Yeah.
But then again, it's kind of like, don't ask too many questions because, like, right. I'm trying to get my work done.
Yeah.
It is that weird dynamic.
It's really weird, and, wow, there's so many things. Kevin and Drake might not talk today. So
Drake looks good. I can see. He looks good, though.
Yeah, yeah. Drake looks good. He's always looking good. He's actually preparing for the Phoenix Grappling Championship. He's for his jiu-jitsu stuff. So he's a savage. So real quickly, you talked about getting in fights with James Ferentz and Reef and stuff. And I have to imagine that that's the kind of stuff where people don't understand when they're not at practice, but those are the things that really later on earn you that respect, right? Like people saw this fucking, you know, who's Casey Kreider? He's his second, like he's this guy, he's playing D-line. Why is he fighting the starters? Like, but you got to give it to him. Like he's really putting himself out there.
Yeah.
Got to respect it. I mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got kicked out of practice. Not kicked out, but I got pulled out of drills by Coach Ferentz for fighting. And then, like, the next day they'd watch the film and they'd be like, you know, you didn't deserve to get thrown out. Like, I see what happened, but you right. can't. Like, hey, it's like, hey, dipshit, you can't be fighting our starters
yep.
on a Thursday before a game, okay? It's like, well, and they get it, but it's like that weird dynamic. You know, there were two things that I always remember. I remember my freshman year, my locker got moved over by Mike Daniels.
Oh, boy.
And Mike is, like, the nicest guy, but he's a monster, right? And, like, he kind of, like, he challenged me a little bit in the locker room one day, and he kind of spouted off at me for nothing. I kind of looked at him, and in my mind I'm going, I either back down and get labeled as kind of like, you know, a wuss on the team, like the bitch on the team, or I say something back. So I mouth off back to him, and he, like, he comes over and, like, grabs me by my shirt, pins me on the ground. He's, like, got his hand on my throat. He's, like, I know he's not going to do anything, but – and I'm, like, screw it. I'm just going to reach up and grab his throat. So I reach up and grab his throat, and he lets go, and he, like, looks at me. He's, like, yo, that's respect, dude. Like, okay, I respect that. And then he went on his way, and, like, that was kind of – you built some respect there. The other one was bull prep in 2010. Riley Reiff was coming off an injury. And he's working with Coach Doyle on the side, and I'm, like, just kind of standing around because it's individual. And Doyle's like, hey, get over here and do some pass rushes with him. He needs to work on this. Reeve spent the entire 15, 20 minutes just punching me in the head.
Yep.
Like, he wasn't pass blocking me. It was like Doyle was, like, telling me, run this way, run that way. And Reeve would, like, set. He'd punch me in the head, and then he'd, like, throw me on the ground, and Doyle would be like, all right, do it again. But, like, I was getting him ready, and Reeve knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
But it was like that was, like, kind of the dynamic I had, because at that point I had been fighting with those guys all year. They were pissed at me because I was going too hard, but the coaches were praising, you know, myself and Joe Forgy for going that hard. And Drake, you know this because you played scout team and you were on the offense and defense, and you too, Kevin. Like, that's the dynamic between the starters and the scout team. Like, it's an interesting relationship you have.
And it's because you just come off camp, right? Like, if it was spring ball and we didn't have to do any Iowa versus Iowa and it was just all, like, in-season format where the whole spring ball was against the scouts team, it would be a whole different dynamic. But we just came off a three-week camp. We're getting ready for a season, and now we have to hit these dudes who are hungry for blood because they're just new in the program, and it's like, come on.
But I was so fortunate to be on that 2009 team because you saw the dynamic between Ricky Stanzi and Pat Anger, like the two signal callers, right? They would be talking smack to each other the entire period, and then a fight would break out. And like, if anyone fought, Pat was fighting. Like, Pat lived for that. And then when he got in the locker room, you saw Pat chumming it up with the guys that he was fighting. Like, it was like, listen, we're gonna fight each other on the field. We're going to push the line with each other. But when we get in the locker room, we're brothers, we're teammates, and that's it. Move on. And I was super fortunate to be on that team and learn from, you know, Greenwood and Anger and Stanzi and Moyaki and all those guys.
You were with some absolute legends on that team. So much. God, there's so much there. That was – so you go back to the – I want to ask this question because – I just want to get it out of the way because I know it's probably going to come up. You play that last game your second year, and now you're the starter. All of a sudden, were there other long snappers on the roster?
There were. So I think Kolka was on the roster.
Okay.
And honestly, like, I played that last game, and we're going into spring ball, and I still was like, 3 on the depth chart.
That's what I'm saying. It's like all of a sudden you were like.
And it was like, and honestly, like, I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. And like, being in that position, you know, it was a challenge and it was something that I didn't handle very well right away. I did a lot of complaining to my parents and the people in my, in kind of my circle. And I remember my mom was like the one that was like, hey, maybe you're not working hard enough. Like maybe you're the one that's fucked up. And I was pissed at her, right? Like, I didn't talk to her for like 2 weeks. I was like, there's no way. And then like, I did some self evaluation. I was like, damn, you know what? She's probably right. And then you just kind of like, you keep working. God, there was another, his name was Charlie. And he was like the big signee. Like he was a camp guy. He was number ranked number two in the nation. And he was ahead of me. And I was like, I'm better than that slap. I know I am. And I just got to work and got lucky. Like, I think he ended up leaving the team, you know, and just got my opportunities and ended up running with it and got put on scholarship after camp that year. Again, like one of the coolest things I've ever done, sitting down with KF and him, you know, telling me, hey, you've earned a scholarship, was special because like, you know, my parents helped me get into college. They were helping me pay for college and being able to tell them, listen, I got it now, you know, go help my sister a little more to get through school. It was like a family thing. And the cool thing was like the way the coaches that program was, they knew that, like they knew getting a scholarship was special for me, but they knew like it was something I wanted to do for my family too.
Yeah. My story went a little differently. I got brought in and they said, hey, KF was like, hey man, you know, you earned the scholarship, but we're not going to give it to you. It's going to go to Riley McCarron and Cole Crosston and probably give one to you next year. And they did eventually put me on. But it is like as a specialist, there's that weird like this, I don't know, because a lot of guys actually don't know if you're on scholarship or not. I'm sure you had the same kind of well, maybe you didn't. But for me, I started for 2 years as a walk-on. Yeah. So, I started my second year after you left. My third year, and by like the middle of that third year, I think everyone just kind of assumed that I was on scholarship. And when they, in those weird like conversations when it comes up, and they found out that I wasn't on scholarship, they would be like, "You're not on." And I was like, "Yeah, no, I don't know. Just don't ask me. I'm just here snapping." And so you had this weird like your third, your fourth, your fifth year where there was really like. There was no competition. Like, you were just kind of by yourself. I mean, I think Kolka was there, right, for some of the time, but it was kind of like this locked in. Did you – back then, the specialist room was looked at in high regard because of what you guys had done for like, a long time, kind of since Kading, and it was very self-run, right?
Oh, no question. You hit it on the head. Like, you know, it was, again, like there was really no one there that was an imminent threat to like take my job at that time. But it's funny that you said earlier, like you kind of got called into, you know, accused of bullying. Like that was always part of the specialist room and it was never bullying, right? Like,
yeah.
Andy Schultz and Ryan Donahue, they would bust my balls harder than they've ever been busted. I mean, like, and it was, like, to a level where, like, it was, like, okay, enough. Like, this is too much.
It was the code. It was the code.
And it was, again, you earned those stripes to get to the next level. But it was never, like, they never crossed the line, and it was never, like, I went home and I was, like, depressed. It was all fun, and it was understood. Like you said, it was understood.
Right.
You know, but during those times, like, I remember watching a guy like Eric Guthrie grind for 5 years or 4 years sitting behind Ryan Donahue.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the funniest things in a punt period was KF would chirp Donahue for shanking a punt because Donahue and KF had a unique relationship.
Yeah.
Donahue would bomb a punt, mouth off at KF. KF would kick him out, put Gus in, Eric Guthrie, and Guthrie would destroy a period.
Yeah.
But it was like Donahue knew he was good enough and he was going to play. So he kind of did that, but it was all so funny to watch. And another guy that kind of kept that fire going, like Trent Mossbrucker.
Yeah.
That dude got under my skin. He knew how to do it. Right. So when you committed, Tyler, you're an All-American. So Drake, you'll love this story. I don't know if I've ever told him.
Don't even give him the satisfaction of saying that shit on this podcast, Casey.
Okay. Drake, please. Hey, just admit.
For the love of God.
Hey, I'm an All-American, and it is what it is. All right.
Bro, so, I'm an All-American too, but you don't hear me going around saying.
Oh, that's because your ears in a water sport.
You, cousin. Hey, okay. It was a harder sport. But continue, Casey.
So Tyler's an All-American coming in, and he's at the All-American game in high school. And so we're going into camp. Tyler's coming in. You know, I'm like the incumbent. But, you know, the way I've always played was I always assume they want someone else to take my job. And that's what's kind of helped me get to where I am today. Even you have to assume that in the NFL. When you stop assuming that, you're going to fall off.
Right.
So I come in like one of the first days, you know, after you committed after the All-American game, and someone taped an article in my locker. And it was highlighted of all of Tyler Kluber's quotes. And to this day, this quote sticks with me. And I kind of feel bad for you, Tyler, because you came in at such a disadvantage in my book because Trent Mosbrucker printed this article, bolded it, blew it up and everything, and highlighted the quote that said, "Casey's very talented, but I think I could teach him a thing or two. I think I can teach him some things. Like, he'll teach me a little bit, but I'm pretty sure I could teach him some too."
I said that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know what? And that doesn't surprise me. We're going to get to where this story keeps going, but continue.
But I never met you, right?
Right.
Like, I think I'd met you maybe on a recruiting visit, but, like, they never put me – like, they never put the long snapper with the incoming long snapper.
Right.
Like, that's just weird. They wouldn't do that. But I remember sitting there and going, like, who is this asshole? He's never played it down in college. Who does this asshole think he is?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what, whatever. And then I was like, you know what, Andy, what would Andy do? Okay, Andy would make him work for his respect, but he would still teach him something. So I guess I'll try and do that. And, like, you were great. You came in and you were awesome, but Mosbrucker really screwed you when you first got there because that quote stuck with me. It's still this – like, I remember it, and it was nothing you did. Tyler, you didn't do anything wrong.
I absolutely did do something wrong because there's no – because that kind of quote, that puts me up in the fucking ranks with Nick Szymanek, who before he came in said that he was going to take – he was coming for CJ and Sokol and Rudock's heads and their job. And, like, I would like to
think – At least you didn't do it on Twitter and you weren't the quarterback recruit and stuff.
True.
Like,
I would like to think that the quote said something like, I know I'm going to learn a lot from Casey and maybe I can teach him a couple things too. Because I was very entitled. And this brings me to, like, when I come in. So it's your senior year and – you're right. We had met one time, like that previous winter. I had come on like the official visit, and like in passing, maybe in the complex, I like shook your hand and we met, right?
Yeah, and it's always this weird, like,
yeah,
hey, you're coming in to take my job, and it's like, hey, you have my job, and
right?
Cool, and see you in a little bit.
And for me, it was never. Though I came off this way 100%, for me, I never in a million years thought that, like, I was coming in and freshman year I was playing. I didn't even want to. Like, I was super excited to just learn behind you. You had done it for 2 years plus a game, and we're about to do it for your third year. And so 3 years plus a game or whatever. And I was always like, Casey's the guy. Like, I don't have to worry about shit this year. I was big chilling on the sidelines. But I did come in and I was like, it was this weird, like, oh, I'm number two. Like, there's nobody else on the roster. I am, like, I traveled the year that I redshirted because for some fucking reason they had trust in me and there was nobody else on the team that could evidently do it. Like,
well, I mean, you'll probably remember this. There was probably a time where you thought you were going to have to play my senior year.
100%. I thought I was going in.
Because Brandon Scherff tried to end my career and just destroy my knee. You know, yep. I played like the last like six games with a full knee brace. I had to, you know, six games left in the year. I had to learn how to snap again because I was snapping with a big offensive line knee brace on. And every time I would snap, my elbow would hit it. And I was like, I'm sure you were standing on the sideline going like, dude, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Like, I'm going to have to go play.
No.
But to that point, like you said before, I should have hit this. Like, that room was self-taught. Like, and I'm not saying the coaches weren't good, but, like, we sat in the coach's office. We didn't even have a specialist room when I was there. You guys have one now.
Yeah.
It was me, Mike Meyer, Marshall Kane, Eric Guthrie, just sitting there watching film of ourselves, everybody else, and self-correcting each other. Mm-hmm. And now I think there's a couple more coaches dedicated to the specialists.
Coach Woods is full time. He is the position coach. It's like any other position room,
and that's huge. But at the time, we were very self taught, and that was the hardest thing that you kind of, as the older players, you had to instill into those younger guys. Like, hey, you're here to be Iowa football players. You're not playing right now. You're probably going to play eventually. But, like, you got to learn a lot this first year because when the older guys leave, it's you. No one's here to coach you.
Yeah. And so – and that's – it's so important because the air in the room, the way it works now.
General managers ask questions to find the right players, like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Is completely different, and it started to change as I kind of was on the way out, and it was so weird seeing where we started with you in the old complex that very first year in 2013 for me, your last year, to where we were in 2017. So much had changed, and I'll get to that in a second. But so I had met you just briefly, right? I unknowingly Mossbrucker puts up the article with all my quotes. That
he sucks.
That sucks big time. And we love sports betting. You guys know that. And whether you've been betting for a while or you're thinking about getting started, we want to let you know about a great resource for sports bettors, the Action Network. The Action Network is where sports fans go bet smarter and experience real financial gains. In fact, their Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. And with an Action Network Pro subscription, you can unlock the very best of the app. When you sign up for the Action Network Pro subscription, you can access the Pro Report, which includes expert projections for every game. You can see money and bet percentages on every game, so you can see the teams professional gamblers are betting on. You can take advantage of the Pro systems, which match winning historical betting trends with the latest games and lines, and you can track every bet you make and get alerts in real time. So if you're looking to bet smarter, an Action Network Pro subscription is the best way to get started. And for a limited time, our listeners can receive 50% off an annual Pro subscription. Just go to theactionnetwork.com now and receive 50% off an annual subscription when you use the code WALKON. The offer won't last long, so go to actionnetwork.com to sign up for the Pro subscription and use promo code WALKON to receive 50% off and start betting smarter today. It's the summer leading into your final season. And, you know, I have your number, or you had my number, but we had never texted really. I was not invited to the summer workouts like the other guys were. And so this is when I knew that, like, you were kind of probably, like, different than most people. You texted me. I'm in Marshalltown. I don't even know if you remember this, but you will once I tell it. You texted me. I'm in Marshalltown hanging out. Senior year summer. Done with high school, like, you know, I'm probably, like, going to hang out with friends that night. And you go, hey, we're snapping today at 3:30. You should come. And I was like, I don't even know if that's legal. Like, am I allowed to go snap with the team? Like, I haven't even been, like, brought into the program yet. I don't know if I can do this. And I said something along those lines to you, and you're like, who gives a fuck? Get to Iowa City. We're going to snap at 3:30. Come to this address. I'll let you in the gate. And I show up, and Marshall Kane, I mean, Marshall, this is his first memory of me, and he'll never let me live this down. The only cleats I have are
Cam Newtons.
Are the Cam Newton Under Armour All-American cleats.
I do remember this.
That I didn't have a choice in getting those cleats. I show up in Florida, and they hand me boxes of cleats, and we're wearing the fucking Cam Newtons. I'm like, okay, I'm also playing three plays today, but give me the Cam Newtons. They're, like, up to my calf, and they're, like, brand-new shiny silver. Like, don't rock with any of the Iowa colors at all. And so I show up, and I'm, like, a fat high schooler who has no, like, college built body yet at all, and we come out to snap, and I snapped fine, and I'm snapping with, like, Mike and you and Marshall, and I think Alden was probably there too. Alden Hafar. And you know, Marshall didn't say anything at the time, but once we got a couple years into the program and he was like finally cool with me and I was actually snapping for him on Kinnick, like during games, he's like, Kluver, I remember when you came in with those fucking Cam Newton cleats. I thought you were the biggest douchebag, and you still are.
Dude, but the crazy thing is like, I do remember that now, and I remember you left, and we were all sitting there, and we were like, and we all knew the quote, right? Like, Mossbrucker made it clear, like, this is, but Mossbrucker did it to bust my balls. He didn't do it to, like, sabotage you, but, right. And then you come in with the Under Armour cleats, and you left. I remember we were probably sitting there, and we were like, dude, who is this kid? But, and again, the thing was, like Marshall, another guy who ended up being a big leader in that group, like, he played a bunch of scout team, too, so he got his credit there. At the time, Mike Meyer had to play as a true freshman and just kind of showed up and kicked his balls off, so he got that credibility. So you have three guys right there who really had to, like, grind to earn the respect in the program, like Marshall and I playing scout team, Mike getting thrown into the fire and performing really well. And then you have, you know, you, a freshman or a high school kid at the time who has no clue how to gain respect in a locker room. You're just trying to figure life out at that point.
Seriously.
With the Under Armour cleats, the quotes.
You're
in a bad situation.
I walked into an absolute fire, dude, to the point where KF, after your first time starting in Minnesota, goes, oh, Casey was the bright spot today. My senior year, KF let everyone in the media know that when I came into the program, nobody liked me. He said that. You can find the video on YouTube right now. If you go to 2017 post-game Ohio State-Iowa KF conference, you can see it. About they ask about the Polecat play, and he goes, well, first off, when Kluver came into the program, all right, everybody fucking hated him. He didn't say fuck. He's like, everybody hated the guy. And I was like, I saw that after the game, and I was like, come on. Like, I was.
Yeah, I've also gotten shit on by KF in the media. He was like, this guy, he's missing all his screws, but he plays hard.
Yeah, like, and as Casey kind of describes, sets the table there with who was in the room and the whole self-taught thing, and, like, it was almost like a turning point of the decade where things were starting to change a little bit. Cornbrath was in the room, and there was questions about, like, his performance a little bit, and you guys were on your way out, right? Like, Mike Meyer last season, Casey Kreider last season. The next year, we had to deal with, like, okay, new snapper. Cornbrath still hasn't, like, really, like, solidified that he's not Donahue by any means, although I still, to this day, think that Cornbrath has the best A-ball that there is on planet Earth.
That's a hot take. I'm not going to lie to you. You tweeted something about that during the season. It was one of the hottest takes I've ever seen. You can live by it. It was a hot take.
Casey, you saw some of those moonshots that Connor Cornbrath would hit.
Connor was a great punter, and he never really
Connor was not a great punter. He was great 1 out of 10.
Yes, he couldn't find that consistency. And to your point again, is like you just said it. You know, in that room was myself, Mike Meyer, Marshall Kane, Eric Guthrie had left, and he was like, Eric Guthrie, I think statistically probably not anymore because Tory Taylor just destroyed probably every punting record in Iowa history. But Gus statistically had better years than Ryan Donahue, and right. Gus made sure we knew that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you had Cornbrath who was kind of trying to figure it out. But he never quite did. And, you know, it was tough, but like that, my senior year, Connor was taking the field punts, which if you guys don't know football, that's like the longer punts.
Behind
and then
the 50,
John Winkie was coming in and he was doing the plus 50s. So the punting was kind of like evolving at the time. And I think Iowa was really close to switching to the spread punt, honestly.
Yeah.
College football was changing at the time.
It was like this changing of the guard almost. Like people started to do things different.
And it's beneficial. Like, you know, I think you know how hard it is to try and snap a ball and then set and block somebody, Tyler.
It's not easy. Yeah.
You know, it took me 2 years to figure out how to do it competently enough to play in a game. But yeah, the room was fun and a funny story, Johnny Mullings was also in the room. He was an Australian that came in. He was kind of like I don't want to say the first because I don't know if there was another Australian punter to come to the program, but he's the first one I can remember. And part of like the specialist fun was we all the recruiting tapes were right there in the coach's office where we watched our film. So like we kind of just popped them in when we were bored and we were looking at these guys they were looking at. And Johnny Mullings' film was unreal.
Yeah.
He was hitting kickoffs like five out of the back of the end zone. And I remember we're in practice one day and Coach Herb was like pissed at Johnny about something. He goes like, Johnny, why don't you go work on your kickoffs? He set up a ball and I've never seen a kickoff worse in my life.
Oh God.
So we're kind of looking like, oh, maybe he mishit it. So he does it again. Coach Herb's like, do it again. Just as bad. Coach Herb stands there, looks at him and goes, you doctored that film that you sent us, didn't you? And then just walked away. Like, Mullings could punt, but his tape showed he was booing these kickoffs, and then it looked like he'd never hit one in his life.
Incredible.
And it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the field.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's incredible.
He got caught right there in his own live, but he was already in the program.
He was there. He made it.
So I remember – so with this whole respect thing, there was a big, like – so 2014 comes around. End of 2014, we get our asses kicked by Tennessee in the Tax Slayer Bowl, and Coach White pulls me and Marshall into the office. This is like, you know, those 8 weeks before spring ball where you come back after break. And Coach White pulls me and Marshall in. I had just started my first season. Marshall had just started his first season and was going to have his senior year up the following year. He tells us that Dylan Kidd is coming in. And, you know, we know nothing about Dylan at the time. But basically, that was Mick Ellis's freshman year. It was also Zach Johnson, the kid that I got called out for bullying's freshman year. And Miguel's freshman year. I think he came in with those two maybe. And so he pulls us in and he looks at us and he goes, hey, you guys know – you guys know this. I don't have to tell you, but you two are about the only two with any kind of potential to lead this special teams group, and y'all are in a fucked up spot. Like, you guys are – and he mentions you, Casey, and Mike. He goes, when Casey and Mike were here, like, this was not a group that the team worried about. And we had a bad year for, in 14, you could say. Cornbrath was punting still that year but had, like, a kind of an up-and-down year. And he goes – I don't know what you guys have to fucking do to do it, but you have to go and earn respect for the specialist group and try and make the team believe in you guys. Because not only were we not great on the field that year, but off the field, all those little things that go into, you know, the stuff that KF talks about, there was just, like, no one liked any of the guys in the special teams room. There was just a real lack of older, you know, Marshall was good, but he was quiet. He didn't say a lot. And I had gotten the job as a redshirt freshman, just handed to me. Mm-hmm. And so it was like this – people were kind of like, do these guys deserve what they're working with here? And so leadership was a really big thing. And, you know, go ahead.
Well, I think what you're saying is that tough dynamic of being a specialist in college and the NFL. Like you're on the team, you've earned your job. You're never really, like, regarded like some of these other guys who are out there grinding every play.
Yep.
And that's kind of where, you know, some of the stuff earlier I said, like, you kind of got to pick your spots.
Yep.
When to not assert your dominance, but, like, challenge people. Like, when people challenge you and your credibility and your worth on the team, you got to challenge them back just to let them know. Like, you almost have to set the precedent. Like, I understand who I am on the team.
Yeah.
You need to also understand that without me, we don't win games.
Yep. And speaking to that point, which is it was rolling right into where I was going, one of the most nervous I've been in the 4 months that I was with you as a freshman long snapper, you know, eyes are wide open. Everything that happens is like, holy shit, like, I don't know if this is what's supposed to be going on. We're in Kinnick. So I've been on campus for like maybe 10 or 15 days. We're late in camp. We're in Kinnick for a practice. And when the specialists practice in Kinnick, it's a bad day because there's no goddamn room. The whole field, one field is not enough for an entire team to really spread out and do what we want to do. And so what ends up happening is And a lot of times you'll see this if you go to like a kid's day at Kinnick. The specialists will find the 50-yard line, and they'll kick cross field and oftentimes into the stands because that's just how far the kicks go. But that's the only space we got. And even then, it's going over people's heads, right? So the specialists are always kind of like the kids on the sideline that are playing with the ball. And sometimes it hits or it rolls into the game or, like, you know, they're that person. So people get pissed off. And Marshall's kick flies a little bit left, and it goes over into the defensive side. And Coach Parker is walking over near, like, the DBs that are doing their drills. And it hits off the wall and rolls into Coach Parker's legs. And it was, like, pretty hard. Like, it hit him. And he looks over, and he goes, "Specialists, why don't you find some other fucking place to kick the balls?" And I'm like, in my head, the immediate, like, go-to was like, okay, I won't look at Coach. We'll just, like, go down to the other end of the field. Like, sorry, Coach. And Casey, you stood up or you turned around and you, like, walked out to, like, a few yards so that he could hear you. And you go, "Coach, you put a fucking goalpost out in the parking lot and we'll kick out there." All right? And I was like, oh, my God. He just said that to Coach Parker. We're going to have to run. We're fucked. I was so scared. And that was one of those moments where I was like, okay, Casey's on a different level of like what he can get away with and how he's respected by the coaches and the other players in this program. And this is an example of that. And so that was just something that really stuck with me. Makes you laugh, but
sometimes you got to pick your spots. And I don't even remember these things until you bring them up. And I do remember that. And sometimes sometimes you do that and you think, you're like, oh, God, I probably shouldn't have said that.
I tested the line there a little bit, yeah.
But, like, sometimes being a specialist is like – it's like doing, handiwork or auto work with your dad. You're trying so hard not to fuck it up.
Yeah.
You inherently fuck it up. Like, mm-hmm. You're just trying so hard not to mess up, you eventually do. Another legendary story in Kinnick was – I think Marshall was kicking off for the scout kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit, like, two kickoffs out of bounds. And he was a young player, and then you just hear KF yell from the other end of the field, "Hey, Marshall, does the card say kick it shitty?" And Marshall yells back, "No, Coach." He goes, "Well, how about we stop kicking it shitty then?" And then you just carry on with the drill. But again, like, Marshall's trying so hard not to fuck it up, and he just, like, because sometimes they want the kick, like, it's deep kick left.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're scouting Ohio State, I don't know if they still do it, but
they still do. They load the side of the field. Yeah.
They load the one side and then they just launch the ball over there. Well, like, that's not an easy kick.
No.
Like, so when you're trying to do it, you're going to hit some out of bounds if you're not used to doing it, and then you just screw the drill up, and then everyone's pissed off at you.
Talking about screwed up drills, I don't know how many times this happened for you, but it happened more than enough times in 4 years for me. That way too many times past what I was okay with, where field goal period rolls around, there's 7 minutes on the clock, and the coaches expect it to go absolutely perfect. And you got two groups, you're running ones and twos, which was maybe the most eye-opening experience for me that first year when I was with you, because I was just thrown in there with the two field goal. And snaps were okay, but like my confidence level of being out there with the second string was not. And KF stands behind, and he watches field goal. It's a break for everybody else that's not involved. What kind of emotions get brought up inside you when you hear the words, "No, no, no, start it over. Start the period over. Start it again."
Dude, I remember my first year, kind of the same thing. Like, Andy and Ryan just weren't having a great day between each other snapping field goals.
Mm-hmm.
And KF, like, started the period over. And they still, like, they just weren't super clean. And KF finally threw them both out and put me and Gus in. And, like, you get excited because it's like, all right, it's my time. Let's do it. And I remember getting over the ball. I put my hands out. I look between my legs. Like, and I see Gus getting ready to catch a snap. But, like, 5 yards behind Gus is KF standing there with his arms crossed.
You can see him every
straight
snap
down the chute.
Mm-hmm.
And like, Joe Judge does it now. And it is like, it shouldn't be stressful because you've done it a million times, but it's like, you know, they're staring right at you.
Yeah.
And again, I think everything happens for a reason, but that stress of having to deal with that, has made me, you know, that's one of the stronger characteristics I have as a long snapper, just snapping field goals is something that, you know, I think if I can rely on doing anything, that's one of them, because I'm used to the head coach just staring straight at you.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get the classic, like, hey, I could go get Joe College to come do your job. How about you do it a little better?
And you're like, no, you couldn't, but
and then you stand on your breath like, yeah, well, why don't you go get Joe College then?
Well, so I had a moment where that Coach Parker thing really stuck with me when you told him to get us the fucking field goal post out in the parking lot and we'd go kick out there. It stuck with me for obviously until now. And we got to a point where in 2015, Coach White, who I don't know, this probably doesn't happen often with you because you don't probably snap it poorly enough for it to happen anymore. But oftentimes in college, you're still figuring stuff out. I was in year one, year two. A lot of times we'd miss a kick, and Coach White would be like, Tyler, snap the ball. And I would turn around and be like, excuse me? Because he didn't always, like, really pay attention to the entire operation. And so if he just kind of thought in his head something happened to mess that kick up, he would just kind of call it out. And there was
so you're
one.
Saying he's a dog shit coach.
He didn't know a lot about snapping detail-wise. And there was one time where it was not I sent back an absolute perfect 12 right to let's see, who would have been? It would have been Dylan in 2015. And Marshall's plant foot slipped and he missed it or whatever. And he goes, Tyler, snap the ball. And I turned around and I in my head, the Coach Parker story, I turned back and I go, Coach, I don't know what was fucking wrong with that snap. You must have been looking at something else. And he didn't say a word. And I just kind of sat there. And Coach Ference was – I mean, it was like the entire place went quiet in my brain at least. And no one said anything. And he's like, all right, next rep. And I was like, fuck yes, I got away with it. Let's go. I've almost made it, you know?
Like I said, you got to do it. The nice thing about, like – football though is they always say the eye in the sky doesn't lie. So like
right.
A lot of times you get some shit for this and that and it's like, all right, let's wait till we watch the film and then we'll see if you see what really happened.
You left Iowa as I mean, I don't know. It's tough because rankings are like bullshit for specialists. Kickers really get the most of it, but like snapper rankings coming out of college, there's not even like anyone who does it hardly. And if they do, it's tough to say they put a lot of thought and effort into it. They kind of you know, they get information from other people and just say that's their top five. You were still, you know, three-year-plus starter and I think one of the more highly ranked. And you are still in the NFL 7 years later. Talk a little bit about that journey and what that's been like.
Yeah, I mean, it was full of ups and downs. Like, I thought I should have went to the Senior Bowl. I thought I had, you know, the tape to back it up. And then you find out that a lot of that stuff comes down to what camps you went to when you were younger, and they rely a lot on the camp circuit, which is fine. You know, the two guys who end up going to the Senior Bowl, Tyler Ott, and I don't remember the other guy's name. You know, Tyler Ott's still doing it. He's in Seattle.
Yep.
But, yeah, I went down to Dallas my first year. I kind of got offered a contract by Dallas and Jacksonville. And just being young and dumb, you know, you look at the two guys who each team had. I went to Dallas. That guy was old. I thought, hey, he's old. I'll be cheap. And I found out pretty quick they weren't going to sign me. But when I got cut, they said, hey, you're good enough to play in the league, but we're not going to make a change, which sucks. Like,
right.
You know, you're being told by the people who made the decisions, you're good enough to play, but we're not making a change. Well, come to find out, the guy who I was competing with is still playing, like, we play twice a year now that I'm with the Giants. So a year goes by. I end up substitute teaching in Iowa City, go back to Dallas, get cut again. And I kind of get faced with it, like, do I really want to do this for another year? Like,
right.
I love teaching. I found a passion in it. I'm going to get married this summer. I want to start a family at some point. And, you know, my parents and my wife were like, give it one more year. So I gave it another year, and I ended up getting I was supposed to fly to New York week 16. Their snapper had gotten hurt. Well, I got stuck at Cedar Rapids Airport.
Right?
Yeah, Diassi got hurt. I got stuck at Cedar Rapids Airport in a snowstorm, and they canceled my workout. And they kind of said, hey, I was like, I was like on the phone with my dad, and I'm like, my dad's like, we can drive. And I called him. I was like, my dad and I will drive. We'll be there at like 10 a.m. tomorrow. We'll drive through the night. And they're like, oh, don't worry about it. You know, we'll reschedule the workout. Well, 2 days later, they sign Tyler Rott to the roster to play. So now I'm like, I'm pissed. I'm like, what the hell? Like, that should have been me. That was my opportunity. But again, everything happens for a reason. So that offseason, I have a workout with Carolina. They say, hey, we're looking at punters, but we want you to snap. Then I get called for a workout in Denver. Well, I had an opportunity to teach, sign a contract to teach at City High
right.
for the upcoming year. I said, you know what? I'm going to take this job. My agent had said, I don't think it's going to happen. Don't turn down a good teaching job. So I accepted the teaching job the day before my workout in Denver. With the school knew, hey, if I get another opportunity, I'm going to go play football.
Right.
Well, the next day I had my workout. You know, I felt good. There were like 8 snappers there, and I felt really good. I kind of told myself, if I don't make this team, if I don't get signed, I'm done. Like, I clearly was the best guy. So I'm sitting in the facility, and my wife texts me. She's like, hey, you're going to miss your flight. And I'm like, this is good. Like, I went to get a physical. Like, I'm going to miss my flight. I think they're going to sign me. So Denver signs me. I have to go to the airport, call the principal, tell him what's going on. And I spent that first offseason working out with the Broncos and then lesson planning. About halfway through camp, you know, the principal calls me, hey, how's it going? I'm like, it's good. And he goes, okay, I need you to resign. We have another teacher to take your job. And I was like, no problem. And it obviously worked out. You know, spent 4 years in Denver, went to the Pro Bowl for one of them, and then just finished up my fifth year with the Giants, which was awesome. But, like, I mean, everything happens for a reason. Like, me not going to New York allowed me to be available for Denver.
Right.
You know, and now I'm in New York and that guy's in Seattle. So it's crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I was always – I – after you – and once you stuck in the league, I was kind of like, I always play this game in my head, like, okay, well, what are the odds that they, what are the odds that two snappers can, in succession from Iowa can stick in the league? Probably not good. Just in the world of like odds, you know.
It's crazy, and no one probably cares about this, but the long snapping position has changed so much. Where if Andy Schultz plays in the era where Danny Ulster played, Andy Schultz probably goes to the NFL because those snappers in those years were bigger bodies.
Yep.
And it's transitioning now to a smaller body where Danny would fit in perfectly.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd probably be in the NFL. And there's always a joke between me, Danny, and Andy that if, like, Danny Ulster and Andy Schultz had a kid, it would be me. Like, I'm kind of in between their size and have a little bit of their personalities. So, like, it's timing's everything. Like, there's a lot of luck that goes into this.
So much luck. And, you know, I always thought, like, well, what kind of resume can I put together that puts me right up there with anybody else other than just what the ball looks like coming back? And right. I thought four years, this wasn't like thoughts while I was in college, but, you know, that final year comes around and you start to think about what your future looks like. And I was like, damn, I've snapped for 4 years. I've only sent back like 3 that are completely unacceptable out of like 1,000 snaps in game. Mm-hmm. I have good film. I'm athletic. I'm more athletic and can run better than half of the guys in the league right now. And, like, I know that when pro day comes around, like, I will ball out, and I'm going to give them as much as they want. And that happened, and you'll think this is hilarious, probably a little bit. It's a little sad, but I'm at pro day, and Kevin actually is the one who they told, but I'll never forget this. I run like a 6.88 L drill, like insane time. Like would have been like 3rd at the combine out of like all receivers and DBs. My 3 cone is like 4.10. My snaps are like perfect. Everybody's watching, and I bench like 22 reps. Everything's great. I have a great day. 40 was like okay, 4.9 or something. And the scouts, while I'm snapping, 2 of them go up to Kevin and say.
It was just one of them. It was the guy from the 49ers.
Yeah, the 49ers guy comes up to Kevin and he goes, wow, your snapper's really putting on a show. It's too bad he's not a little taller.
Now, someone like, yeah, like, you really like your snappers. Like, you know, the height's working against him, though. I'm like, yeah, but guy can snap a football. He's like, yeah, well, we can see that. Should have done some more back extensions, yeah, or whatever you call it. Yeah.
And John Weeks has been in the league for, yeah, I think, 10 years now, and he's just as tall as you are. And it's the luck that goes into it, right?
He was my one, you know, he plays for the Texans, and he's like my idol, right? Because he was the ideal, you know, if I can get to 245, which I did, I got big. I put on a lot of weight for that pro day and still ran really well and everything. I was like, I can't get to 6 foot or 6'1", so I'm going to have to get a little bit wider because they care about that on PAT field goal. Otherwise, these 330-pound nose tackles are going to run through me, right? Like, and on punt, I should still be able to run a little bit. They don't, you know, I should be able to hold my own. And there's just not very many spots at all anyway. You know, maybe three guys a year that switch hands on a team.
Mm-hmm.
And those three guys, they're looking to fill it with someone who's 6'2", 6'3", and athletic and not 5'10", and kind of athletic, right? And
it's the mystery of the position, too. Like, and James Morse touched on this last week. Like, you know, it's all about what are you willing to give up and do to finally get there, right? And he talked about the grind of the day-to-day life on as a practice squad player. And honestly, a specialist is pretty close. You have one mistake, you're probably going to get fired.
Yep.
And I remember when I signed in Denver, you know, I signed my contract, I go talk to the strength coach, and the first thing he said, I weighed like 250 pounds in, and because that's what I was told. That's what snappers weigh.
Yep.
Weigh that. And they said, before you get back for OTAs in a month and a half, you need to lose 15 pounds. Like, you cannot play at 250. We need you down at, like, 235.
Damn.
And I was like, whatever I have to do, yeah. Right. And that was, like, just the next thing you had to give up, right? Like, I spent 2 years putting my life on hold to get here. I'll do whatever it takes now. If you want me to lose 50 pounds, I'll find a way to do it.
Right. I really saw that play out when Marshall – couldn't stick somewhere, you know, and he was with the Giants actually for a while.
Yeah.
And I mean, Marshall's got an absolute cannon of a leg. I mean, you talk about some of the strongest legs out there. Marshall can be in that conversation. I thought who knows what his tape looked like, you know, how he kicked when he was in front of teams, but his accuracy really improved over the course of his tenure at Iowa and then into the NFL. And I mean, what else could you want, right? Like, Marshall seemed to be – he did well in his preseason games when he played with the Giants, and they just go with the other guy. And sometimes it's just such a – talk about 32 jobs in the world, and then as far as a job opening, there's only, like, three spots. I mean, it's some of the most elite – I know that this kind of ends the specialists get to talk about themselves episode, but it's one of the most elite positions and, like, hard places to get on earth.
Well, and then we're all together. Like, I don't make it in Denver unless Marshall Cain gets invited to the combine, because there were more people there to watch Marshall kick field goals because he was going to the combine at his pro day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in town, so, you know, they had – I think Dylan Kidd was there to hold.
Yep.
And you were still playing, right, Tyler?
Yes.
So, Tyler, you couldn't snap at the pro day, so they needed someone to snap. Well, I was like, yeah, I'll come in. Well – not only did I snap at pro day for Marshall and his field goals, which then got, you know, I know Denver scout was there and asked me to snap punts. Like, I didn't plan on snapping punts. It was like, hey, I'll come snap. And then a couple guys were like, hey, could you snap? Or I wanted to snap field goals. And a couple scouts were like, why don't you snap some punts too?
Yeah.
Like, that needed to happen. And I'm still playing teams and coaches are like, hey, man, I remember seeing you when I went to work out that kicker at Iowa and he needed a snapper. And I would come in and like I said, we're all tied together in some way, shape, or form. Like, from the beginning when you got sabotaged by Trent Mossbrucker to Marshall going to the combine, you know, 2 years after I had graduated.
It's crazy. It's crazy. The world of special teams is it's weird and it's hard to describe unless you've been inside of it and the way that it kind of works. Before we close this down, you are a big wrestling fan. You talked about how you lost weight in high school and your dad was pissed at you, and I you wrestled all the way through high school, right?
So I wrestled. One of the coolest things I've ever done was go to the I was a on the national Greco team for Team Iowa to compete at Fargo in high school.
Damn.
I won like two matches in 2 years. Like I wasn't any good. Like I got thrown on my head a bunch, but
yeah,
like in terms of my athletic development, like being able to like just internally say, hey, I'm a national qualifier. Like I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
I wasn't any good, but like that was something that gave me confidence.
And I was wrestling right now. They just had their first meet against Nebraska. I'm sure you watched. What are your thoughts on that? Them being denied earlier last year for the national championship and their and the mindset of that coming into this year, what do you think the odds are that anyone dethrones them? Like it's their championship to lose, isn't it?
I would think so. Time will tell, but the first three out the gate for Iowa Wrestling right now was Spencer Lee, DeSanto, and then Ironman are just disgusting. Like
it's
murder's row. I tweeted a big wrestling reporter yesterday. He asked if I got to watch. I've built some relationship with these guys, and it's always fun to talk to them. But there are two things. Was that the first three for Iowa is nasty. Like I don't think anyone can compete with that. And then I need to get on the Nelson Brands weight program.
Yes.
I mean that dude is rocked up. He got so big from last year to this year. Like whatever he did, I need it. I'm gonna start doing it tomorrow. And then I might look like someone like a Luke Rhodes in Indianapolis, and I'll get a visor and everything.
Luke Rhodes is kind of my hero because he's into like the CrossFit stuff, and he's jacked out of his mind. He's like the one snapper in the league that if you just saw, you're like, oh, you play linebacker in the league, huh?
He really did too.
Yeah, I know. And so Iowa wrestling is going to be insane, and I know that you're really excited about that. Nelson Brands, I tweeted after like during his match, I was like, Nelson is taking your lunch money and you're just not eating that day because he's thick with like four C's and his mentality, I would never want to be on the mat with that kid. Like
it's funny when I was substitute teaching in Iowa City after the first year I got cut, I ended up coaching wrestling at City High.
Yeah.
And I remember when we wrestled West that year, Nelson was on the team.
Yep.
And they turned the lights up down at City High, and they had the spotlight on, and Nelson's out there wrestling. And, I mean, I don't think we really thought our guy was going to win.
Yeah.
Because Nelson was a monster. And then all of a sudden you hear someone screaming and coaching from the stands, and it was Terry. Terry was there in the dark in the top row coaching Nelson as he's wrestling. And being a wrestler and my dad was my coach, like I knew Nelson didn't hear anything he said. Like
right.
You don't hear that. When you're wrestling, but Terry was going ham out there, and it was just funny, like some small high school Iowa gym, and you got Nelson and Terry.
And Nelson probably didn't need it at all, right? Like, he didn't even need the coaching. Like, he was going to run that kid off the mat. That family, it's just, they don't know anything else. I don't know what they're going to do when they're too old to not coach, or like...
I tell you what. One of the coolest things we were talking about being a dad. Tom Brands' kids went to City High, so I got to know a couple of those guys. And, you know, Tom's son was an incredible actor. He was into the arts, right?
Right.
He didn't wrestle. And he tried it for a year, and I got to know him a little bit. But seeing that out of Tom, like an elite head coach, an Olympic gold champion, whose kid doesn't want to play a sport, was important for my development as like, so it goes back to always learning, right? Learning from everything. But seeing that, and like now I have a son growing up, like I'd love it if he played football, but if he doesn't want to play football, like I've seen the blueprint to how to handle that.
Right.
And it was awesome.
They're incredible people to have as part of the Iowa community. Well, I'm sure you have, like we said, you have two kids and a wife who's probably like the rock of your family, just holding it down, trying to let the house not fall apart. Yeah. Let the house just keep it together while you do stuff like this. So thank you for joining us today and nerding out on special teams with me because the other two didn't have to do much at all.
Well, if you need backup, you know I got your back. And if any of these other guests come on and want to slander specialists, send them my way.
We don't like to slander too many specialists. We just really like to slander Kluver.
Yeah, it's just me.
We've all done that every once in a while.
Yeah, it was because of the Cam Newton cleats, and that's just what it is.
Yep.
Episode 181 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Thank you guys for joining us. Hope you enjoyed Casey. We'll talk to you again Thursday. Casey, thanks for joining us. Talk to you guys next time.
everyone. I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo. We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams. Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today. So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram, too.